Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
This podcast is brought to you by Bet Online. Bet Online, the fastest, easiest, and safest way to bet on all things sports. With March Madness, the Masters, and Major League Opening Day right around the corner, Bet Online has all the latest news, scores, and odds to help you win big. The best part? You'll receive a 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. Head over to betonline.ag and use our promo code BLUEWIRE to receive free money. Plus, signing up is a great way to support the podcast you are listening to right now. Again, that's promo code BLUEWIRE, all one word, when you sign up at betonline.ag. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
Breaking news, Terry Rozier. He'll be the next starting point guard of the Charlotte Hornets.
Step back, wide open, and it's good! Terry Rozier!
All right, what's going on? And welcome to another Buzz Beat, your favorite Charlotte Hornets podcast. This is Richie Randall, and I'll be joined by Spencer Percy today. Spencer, long time no talk. How's everything going?
Going well. We got conference tournament play just 1 week away. Always my favorite time of year. I grew up going to the ACC tournament, so I get more excited about the conference tournament sometimes, than the NCAA tournament. So looking forward to that. How about you? What's going on?
Not much. I'm kind of getting over a cold here, so you can probably kind of sound or hear the sound of my raspy voice, but I'll push through, but I'm doing good. On this episode, guys, we're going to recap the game between the Hornets and the Pacers, but just to let you in on a little bit of a secret here, we've actually are now recording in the middle of or towards the end of the third quarter. We kind of just tuned out. So we've got everything that we need to know. Garbage time has started for this Hornets and Pacers game. And who knows, maybe when we get off this podcast, they will have pulled off the best comeback in Hornets history. But as of now, it's not looking that way.
I'm pretty sure they won't hold it against us, Richie. I'll actually give you an update here. The Hornets are down by, you can see if my math is here, right? Yeah, 39 points at the end of the third quarter. So don't blame us for tuning out.
How many points do they have at the end of the third?
55.
Oh, so that's exactly what the Pacers had.
To 70.
Against the Raptors. Yeah,
that's right. We'll probably get to 70, but it's going to be close.
Yeah. But we're actually going to first start off from a comment from two of our listeners of the show at British Buzz and at MM Hornets on Twitter. They were wondering about the idea of trading for Al Horford this offseason and kind of becoming a place where the Sixers can dump salary into our salary cap situation here and maybe give some draft picks to Charlotte in the process. So just to kind of give you guys a rundown here of Al Horford, he's going to be 34 years old next year, and he has a contract that runs for the next three seasons after this one, and he'll be 36 by the time his contract is up. He is making $27.5 million, and according to my numbers, I know our numbers differ a little bit, you remove the cap holds, The Hornets have $89 million in salary between the 10 players and that first round draft pick. That gives them $25 million in cap space. If you were to renounce all those free agents that we have, I think there's like three of them, Biombo, Billy, and Bacon as well. So we couldn't just take them into cap space. We would still have to send someone out the opposite way, because that would put us over the salary cap situation there. So yeah, so you add Horford, who's making about $27.5 million, and that takes us above the salary cap. So we would have to send someone back in that trade. I think that Horford definitely has been a little bit underwhelming this season with the 76ers, Spencer. I think the fit is a little bit clunky. I think he's better suited to play the five, but clearly when you have Embiid on that roster, he's not going anywhere from that five position. You know, playing that pick and roll game, Horford has always been good in the pick and roll, pick and pop game, and it just doesn't seem like he's as involved with this team. I know they moved him to the bench at one point, and I think he actually just got his first start again the last game that they played. So any thoughts on this idea, not necessarily Horford as a player, maybe he's aging clearly, but the idea to maybe take on Horford, who takes up $27.5 million, which is a lot of money, but maybe trying to get an asset back? I know we kind of talked about some kind of trade like this before.
Yeah, I mean, I think it could potentially be a wise use of cap space for the Hornets this summer. Certainly if they don't, you know, they don't see a player in free agency that they're not going to spend all their cap space on, but, you know, they don't see a player that really fits for them that they would spend, you know, through 14 or 15 million or something like that. I think it could be a good use. You bring up a good point, you know, with his contract right now, 27 and a half for next year, Charlotte would have to send out some salary as they currently stand. Now, there's some things Charlotte could do to potentially get to that 28 number. You know, I'd have to like go back and look at all the cap holds and what their options would be, so they could just absorb his contract into their cap space. But right now, like you said, they have some obstacles there. So it becomes tricky, you know, because you got to send out salary. And so that means you're sending out salary, probably none of which Philadelphia would be interested right in taking. So that's a problem. You probably have to get a third team involved, which probably just makes this whole hypothetical really nonsensical, I guess. Also, Philly doesn't own their first round draft pick this year, which complicates things as well. I believe that one's going to Brooklyn. So, you know, they'd have to part ways with a future asset, which is fine. I think, I mean, Charlotte's timeline, that makes sense. I wouldn't say that would be a deal breaker, but just something to note. But yeah, I mean, I think Horford is like the kind of player that for a team like Charlotte, that's in no hurry, certainly needs some help in the middle. You know, they've got one center falling off the books, potentially two, you know, Billy Hernan Gomez as well, if they decide to move on from him. So they're going to need to do something with that position this summer, with Cody Zeller being really the only center you have on the books. So yeah, I think it makes some sense. If you can get an asset for it, you know, why not? But there's some real obstacles right now that would limit that being a possibility. Unless, again, Philly was willing to reroute, you know, whatever salary we sent somewhere else.
Right.
But then, Richie, you got to think now you're at kind of like an asset neutral kind of deal where you're just taking Horford. Because if Philly's doing you a favor and rerouting a salary somewhere else, you're going to have to do something for them, I would assume. So it seems a little too complicated for Charlotte maybe to get it done.
And I don't know if I would technically rule Horford out in terms of just like his career being over. I think, like I said, the fit is a little bit clunky with the Philadelphia 76ers. Yes, he is aging. I'm a little bit nervous about the fact that he's getting paid for three more seasons. It kind of brings back the Nick Batum thoughts again, where if he doesn't perform next year or the year after, you're stuck with this guy until 2023, I believe, when he's 36 years old. And I'm a Gator fan, so I know this guy coming out of college. I was a big fan of his, and he's been one of the best mid-range shooters, not the best mid-range shooter like big, just been one of the best mid-range shooters in the game consistently since he's come into the league. And last season, he shot 53% from mid-range. This year, it's down to 42. And as a three-point shooter with the Philadelphia 76ers, he's only shooting 32% this year. So the Hornets have always said that they're not going to be a player in free agent. So if they do make a trade, this would be a quote-unquote big-name player that they can acquire during free agent season, just not through free agency. All right, so rapid-fire questions. I put out a tweet today asking for just quick rapid-fire questions. We don't have to spend as much time on these. First one comes in and asks, why didn't Charlotte try for Dragan Bender when he was waived. He's been showing some potential. I will say, I'll be the first to say that I'm not a big Dragan Bender fan, nor do I watch a lot of him, but he's never has really impressed me all that much. He has been picked up by the Warriors. The comment says he has been showing potential, but he's played one game with the Warriors and scored 6 points. So I don't know how you can call that potential just after one game and scoring 6 points. So any thoughts on Hornets not going after Dragan Bender? I think the position that he also plays is kind of loaded as well with the Hornets roster.
Yeah, I don't really have a whole lot to add there. I mean, yeah, this season, he's played a total of
like
16
games. Oh,
okay. Yeah, and averaged less than, or no, excuse me, you're right, like 8 games. Yeah. So that's not a lot, averaging less than 14 minutes a game. Yeah, I'm with you. I don't really see where the potential is that he's shown. I guess he shot it okay from behind the arc this season. I haven't seen much of Bender really since early in his career in Phoenix. Like you. So, I would have said, yeah, worth a look for the Hornets, you know, nothing to lose here with a team that's rebuilding, young roster, you know, Bender's still a young guy, but I wouldn't get too upset about the Hornets, you know, not going after a guy like Bender. I would spend more time thinking about maybe what the Hornets missed at the deadline with a guy like Giles or some opportunities there, you know, for a team that says they're not going to be very busy in free agency and don't expect to spend aggressively. I thought there were some opportunities for them with three expiring contracts at the deadline to get back either some, second chance guys, broken goods, young players. There had to have been a lot of scenarios out there. I just choose to believe that the front office we have is a little too draconian and old school to do business in a league that has a lot of GMs that are not that anymore. And I know that it's going to come with a lot of pushback, but the Hornets, whatever they do in terms of bringing up players from the G League, like Jalen McDaniels or the Martin Twins or Joe Cheeley or whoever else, sign to a 10-day contract from here to the rest of the season, and they have Cheeley on one currently. We'll see if that continues after his 10 days are up. To me, this is all like, not all, I know they're developing young players, but a lot of this is window dressing to me, and they're spending it to fans as, you know, we're really committed to developing young players, and that's true. And those players are Malik Monk, Devontae Graham, and Miles Bridges. Okay, and PJ Washington. The rest of it is we're trying to lose. That's why we're giving serious minutes to Jay. I mean, seriously, like at some point, it's all fine and well about talking about developing players, but the guys that are getting minutes tonight, I mean, not even halfway through the third quarter tonight, Richie, there's a lineup that features Joe Cheeley, the Martin Twins, Jalen McDaniels, and Bismack Biyombo. Mm-hmm. Look, I understand you're trying to develop players, but that's trying to lose. It just is, man.
No, I get you. Yeah, and kind of leads us to the next question here or comment. Devontae Graham did not start today and has not played. One of the questions came in, can we now consider Devontae a bust? And just the way that he's played recently definitely has not been, you know, high. But I don't know if I can consider Devontae Graham a bust because he's a second-round pick, first off. So the expectations of Devontae Graham were not high to begin with. So for me to consider Devontae a bust, I think it's all dependent on your expectations. I think he's come back to earth a little bit with his three-point shooting, and he still has got to find that in-between game that he struggles with at times, but he has shown some promise over the past couple of weeks with that mid-range game. So do I consider Devontae a bust? No. Do I expect him to perform at the way that he did in the first 30 games of the season consistently? No. But I think there's probably a happy medium between those two. So last question before we kind of touch upon the Indiana game, but any thoughts on Devontae being a bust?
So wait, this Devontae Graham, we're talking about the same guy, Devontae Graham.
We're talking about Devontae Graham, yes.
If he was a bust, yeah, no, I don't think so. Second round pick. All right, here's a guy last year. He averaged about 14 and a half minutes per game, 4.5 points, shot 28% from behind the arc, shot 34% from the field. This year, averaging 35 minutes, averaging 17 and a half points per game, shooting almost 37% from behind the arc, 37% field goal percentage. Yeah, it could be better. We've touched on that a lot. I mean, the areas this guy's improved in, I mean, just watch the Indiana game tonight. We don't have Devontae Graham. our offense is officially, we've made it, Richie. We're officially a G League offense tonight. And a lot of that has to do with Devontae Graham's absence. I mean, there's no playmakers on this team when he sits. So although he has struggled recently, he is still lifted this offense up just with his ability to set his teammates up and get an offense flowing and keep it moving. His ability to read the floor. In no universe is this guy a bust. His second round pick, I mean, he was in the 3-point contest this year. No, he's not a bust.
Yeah, I think bust is probably a strong term. I don't think many people should consider him a bust. So that kind of leads us into this game here against the Pacers. As we are recording, the score is 106-65. Pacers are in the lead. Devontae Graham did not get the start, kind of learned of that an hour and a half before the game started. Monk got his first career start at the guard position. And I think, you know, you just talked about this, Devontae Graham being someone that kind of raises the floor when he's out there. You know, with Monk being in there with Rozier, I do like Monk handling the ball more than Rozier. But by the same token, it feels like maybe Monk tried to score a little bit too much off the dribble, which got him into some trouble last season and a little bit this season. When you played off the ball, you just catch and drive and you be aggressive, you know, off steals, off cuts and stuff like that. That's where Monk is the best. But when he handles the ball a little bit more, or if you put him in that point guard role, especially when there's not shooters around him, he might take some unwarranted shots. There was not a lot to take away from this game. I will say that Miles Bridges continues to impress me in just the variety of ways in which he scored. I made a note of this in the first quarter. He scored in the paint off a post-up. He scored in the paint off of a drive. He scored near the paint off a pull-up mid-range shot, and he also hit a three-pointer. So Miles Bridges is slowly coming into his own, and we're seeing that even with the talent that's around him that's a little bit lacking.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, you know, Miles has impressed me, and I may know this tonight, Richie. You know, he is hard. He's under control. He's hard to speed up right now. Part of that is, you know, his physicality and his strength. He can absorb contact and finish in the paint, you know, whether it be a post up, whether it be, you know, one or two dribbles, kind of getting his shoulder into the chest of his defender and finish him with that little half hook floater. I mean, he's got a lot of different tools around the basket to score with. He's got a nice touchdown there, but you mentioned it, the three-point shots really started to come around recently. He made off the dribble mid-range jumper tonight after getting chased off the line. I mean, that might have been off a ball screen, actually. So, I mean, yeah, you're seeing three levels of scoring, and I've just been impressed with his poise recently as a scorer. And look, I think the rookie sophomore game, or excuse me, I guess the rookie sophomore U.S. versus the world game, that really it helped his confidence. I mean, I think that is clear that for a young player like that to win MVP in that game, I think is huge. And especially for him, a player who has, you know, he's been back and forth with his confidence. So, excuse me, I got my dog down here scratching himself, and you can hear it's Kimba, actually.
It's Kimba. He's back.
Making noise. All right. I got to take his collar off. So, I think Miles has been, I think he's been great. I mean, he's shown steps like Malik Monk has shown steps this year, and those two, seeing development out of them has been really important. You brought up Monk too, Richie. You know, I think that the number one thing he's shown this year is his ability to attack the basket off the bounce, whether that be in the half court or transition. It's something that, you know, in the past we saw him with the ball, you know, 1, 2, 3 dribbles, a little confused as what to do. He would just put a shot at the rim, right? He would not put his head down and try to get to the rim often. We've seen him do that this year. We've seen him finish through contact with that extra strength. That's a real thing. And then when he gets in there and he senses the second defender, 9 times out of 10, he's making the right pass to the corner or back to the top of the arc or whip around pass to PJ or Cody, whoever's, you know, sitting right there under the basket. So I've been really impressed with him as well. Tough night for Monk, but those two, they're, you know, Monk and Miles' development has to be really the headliner of the youth development this season, I would say, when you're not talking about, you know, Devontae's early season surge.
Right, right. My favorite play of this game, I know this is only 3 quarters in, but my favorite play of the first quarter actually happened in a Miles Zeller pick and roll, which I don't feel like I see a whole lot. So Miles and Cody ran a pick and roll, and Cody catches the ball off the short roll and hits PJ Washington for the corner three. So it's interesting stuff like that where you have players like Miles Bridges and Cody Zeller and PJ Washington who are a little bit more versatile and can play multiple positions. And you just don't see that often. Miles running a pick and roll, and it led to a corner three. Now, there wasn't a lot of good in this game. There's a whole lot more bad. I think the defense, the transition defense, was poor. A lot of miscommunications on defense leading to just a lot of uncontested shots, whether it was from three or in transition. At one point, I tweeted out that the Pacers were shooting 83% at the rim and 70% from behind the arc. And that happened to be like in the second quarter. Like, that wasn't necessarily, you know, a first quarter stat real early on. These were on, you know, a handful of touches and shots here. So a lot of bad on the defensive side, and clearly not being able to score as well. Spencer, any kind of lasting thoughts here from this game? I know you were talking about the fact that the Hornets are trying to lose, but any other kind of thoughts?
Yeah, no, I mean, just this game specifically, I think you touched on the struggle in transition defensively for this team. You know, I thought that they get caught on switches too easily still. You know, I mean, I understand this can, when they are playing man defense, this can be a very switch-heavy scheme. But look, when you got Malik Monk and Terry Rozier out there, you just don't have the horses to switch but so much. And I thought that those two, specifically Monk there early in the game, just getting caught on too many just like a simple baseline flex screen. You can't get caught on those switches and get, you know, switched out on Sabonis, and then somebody else is coming to scram you out, and now they just flip it to the opposite corner and get a wide open three. I mean, these are the uncontested shots you were talking about. So it's really, this is a young team that just is like a split second off, not a split second, a full second probably off with their communication, which leads to a lot of confusion, switches, trying to scram each other out of bad situations. And all of a sudden, you know, the veteran teams like Indiana are just too smart. They're gonna nail you for that stuff and get wide open shots. So, and the other thing is just getting beat off the dribble just very, very easily. I mean, and that's everybody. I mean, you saw Rozier get beat, saw Miles get beat early, Monk get beat a few times, where, again, this is a veteran team. They're going to space the floor perfectly. If they get two steps and they're going to the rim, second defender comes, corner, back to the top, wide open shot. The Hornets are too young to be able to rotate through all that action. So, and we've seen that over and over this season. That's not new. But yeah, I mean, a good lesson for the Charlotte team tonight, because Indiana got the doors beat off of them in Toronto last game, lost by 40 plus points. They very clearly realign themselves with this season. And because look, they were playing a bad young Charlotte team tonight, but boy, oh boy, were they had a mission. They didn't care who they were playing. They could have been playing a youth YMCA team. They were out there to execute at a high level and play with a lot of energy. So I was impressed with the Pacers tonight.
Yeah, so maybe Charlotte will take that same motivation Wednesday night against the Knicks. So you better watch out, New York. So we'll turn that 40-point loss into another 40-point win. TJ Warren also had a strong game. It seems like he's always beating the Hornets. I think he's averaging like 25 points against us. At halftime, he had 15 points, and the last time I checked, he's at like 18, but I'm sure his minutes have probably been, you know, cut off at this point. So thanks again, guys, for tuning in to another Buzz Beat. Make sure you are subscribed to us on your favorite podcast platform, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening to us right now. The Hornets will take on the Knicks Wednesday night in Charlotte. For Spencer, I am Richie. We'll see you guys next time.